Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We're going to get to the video. Yep.
Bonito.
All right, now we're live here with the belated edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. And we got big fights coming up this weekend, of course, to talk about. We have a new type of guest on tonight. Actually, not that new, but we had ring girls on before, but tonight we have another ring girl for mixed martial arts, a woman named Shannon Irk. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but we'll ask her when we get her on at about 9:15 here. So we got plenty of... time to discuss the big one this weekend, Timothy Bradley versus Manny Pacquiao. I know you did a big preview on that, Tony. I haven't even got a chance to read it yet, but I'm going to get it up tonight.
Well, thank you. I did a preview on it. I have been writing it for the last few days. And as I said in my preview, this is a different kind of challenge for Manny Pacquiao. He's in there with a guy that's undefeated. Never he doesn't know what it's like to lose. He's also a very Timothy Bradley is a physical fighter. He's a very strong fighter, well conditioned. He's got quick hands. He's got quick feet. He's got a lot of ability. I saw him go over to England as an underdog in the backyard of a junior Witter and beat him. He put Witter down. He hurt him very badly in the sixth round with another hand right. Boxed down the stretch and won a split decision in Witter's hometown, which basically means he won about 9 rounds of the 12 because it was much more one-sided than the judges had it. One judge was giving it to Witter. Already got to see an eye dog back. Bradley's two biggest weaknesses. I'm not going to say his chin. I know Kendall Holton had him down sometimes. I'm not going to say his chin because it hasn't really been tested. Kendall Holton knocked him down twice, first round and 12th round, and Bradley pretty much controlled the action from rounds 2 through 11. I am going to say that Bradley's two biggest weaknesses, one would be a lack of clearance. This time he's gotten guys hurt, and he's not really put the pedal to the metal. He's not pressed the action. He's not going for the knockout. That could have cost him that junior Witter fight when he had Witter hurt. Imagine if he didn't get the decision over in England. The other weakness is more of a perceived weakness, which is he could be gaining the reputation as a dirty fighter. Late in his career, Evander Holyfield, late in the career that's still going on, Evander Holyfield gained that reputation as a dirty fighter, especially after the fight with Mike Tyson because of the headbutt issue. He landed headbutts on Tyson in both of those fights. And then also I remember a fight with Haseem Rahman. He landed a headbutt that basically had Rahman growing a basketball out of his forehead. So Bradley is similar to that, where, he often comes in with his head, and he, because he's a shorter type of guy and he comes in with his head down, he often gets the better of these clashes because it's like the top of his head, which is the hardest part of the body, going against the guy, the opponent's face. I know what it's like to be butted in the face like that, and it's not very enjoyable. Especially for a guy that has no hair to cushion any of it. And that can move him due to the fact that he's going into a fight with a bad reputation. And if you're the kid in school that's always known for cheating and everything, and if something bad happens or if something questionable happens, you're automatically labeled as a cheater. And your reputation is going to supersede you. Whereas the referee will be inclined to take points away, will be inclined, to even possibly issue a disqualification. Sooner than he would if it was, say, Miguel Cotto in there. He does not have that reputation. Those are two knocks against Bradley. The other knock, and you can't really say if this is going to be a weakness or not, is the fact that this is the brightest light that he's ever been under. This is the biggest stage of his career. I mean, he went over to England and beat Junior Witter. That was impressive. He had a high-profile fight, I believe it was in Michigan, against a fellow undefeated fighter, Devin Alexander. And there were two undefeated fighters fighting in a completely neutral arena under the HBO light. So, yeah, there was some pressure on the granted, and the fight didn't live up to expectations. It was actually a very dull fight. Both sides were very cautious in that. Now, you're going and you're going to be the main event. The guy doing all the press conferences, the guy under the bright, shining lights of the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada, with the number one boxer in the world today, a guy who's an icon in his whole home country. The whole world's going to be watching, and you're in that spotlight with him. Now, some guys will rise to that. Some guys live for that. And some guys, that light is too bright for them, and it causes them to wilt. What's going to happen to Timothy Bradley here? That remains to be seen on Saturday night.
Yeah, and he's pretty confident in a way, I know that. He actually did a little stunt at the press conference where he came up with a ticket, a giant novelty ticket, they call them, like the big novelty checks you get after a game show or whatever. And so he comes up with a ticket for number two in November, that rematch of this fight, because he thinks he's going to win.
Now, last night, after I pretty much had my article done, and I was just going around, like, reading different things on the fighters and looking to see what different people are writing about it, I actually found one guy that had did a round-by-round preview, and he did scoring with it as well, and had graphics for, I guess it's Fight Night 4, whatever the latest Fight Night game was. And it had Timothy Bradley and Manny Pacquiao on there, and it was taking still shots. And the one picture had, I think it was the sixth or seventh round, had Pacquiao on the canvas. Saying Bradley was going to floor him with a right uppercut, and then it would go kind of back and forth over the last few rounds. It was Bradley winning a 1 or 2 point unanimous decision. And that is a very interesting possibility. You're talking about a guy who's a good boxer. He hits relatively hard. He just doesn't have the confidence to sometimes follow up. Manny Pacquiao's human. Juan Manuel Marquez proved that. He's not going to be feasting on a slow-footed fighter like a Joshua Crotty, like a Shane Mosley, who's well past his prime, like an Antonio Margarita, like a Miguel Cotto, by the well past his prime Oscar De La Hoya or Ricky Hatton. The guys Pacquiao had fought in that succession of fights, from his second fight with Marquez in March of 2008 up until his last fight with Marquez, you look at it, he fought a guy, David Diaz. Strong fighter, very tough, a lot of heart, easy to hit, limited, slow feet, knockout Pacquiao. Then he stepped up and he fought De La Hoya, one of the best in the world in the late 90s and early 2000s. In 2008, he was severely faded. Pacquiao destroyed him. Then we move over to 2009, he fights Ricky Hatton. Ricky Hatton, once again, a very much a face-first brawler. Pacquiao destroys him. Fight with Joshua Crotty, a very strong physical fighter, but not exactly, the fleetest of foot. Pacquiao just pretty much puts him in a shell. Crotty didn't want to fight, and he just picked him apart over, 12 rounds. Easy decision. Miguel Cotto, tough fighter, easy to hit, right in front of you, not the fastest feet in the world. Pacquiao's hand speed busted him up. Then you got Margarito. Pacquiao destroyed him. And in fact, speaking of Margarito, he just announced his retirement. That was a fight really sped that process up. Destroys Margarito, beats him to a pulp. Yeah. And everybody's thinking, you know what, Marquez is past his prime. This is the time Pacquiao's really going to take him out and dominate him. Well, Marquez is still very good and an accomplished boxer. Oh, I forgot the Shane Mosley fight in there with Pacquiao. Pacquiao knocked him down. Mosley did not want to fight. Pacquiao just pummeled him over the course of 12 rounds. But then you get to Marquez. Still had a lot of boxing ability left. Still a great counterpuncher. Still knows angles. Still knows how to fight. And a lot of people thought he won that last fight against Pacquiao. Pacquiao is human, and he still has trouble with Timothy Bradley is a very good boxer.
So, Federico retired this week?
Yeah, I just saw my Facebook update about it today.
So that's a...
We had some technical difficulty here. I think we're back now. We got a commercial playing in the background. It's one of these stupid sites. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
So I was saying, this is like the third boxer I've heard of this week to retire. We had Winky Wright retired after the Saturday card there. Then we had Shane Mosley. Shane came first, I think. Maybe he came after, I don't know. But Winky Wright and Margarito. Trying to shut all this crap down. Hold on. I hate stuff that starts automatically. These stupid websites. Come on. Hold of this. So it was a, I guess I probably never get another opportunity to interview the guy. I got to ask at least a couple questions before he retired.
I also wanted to, before we talked about last weekend, sorry, I wanted to mention the fight card coming up out of Pacquiao Bradley is, a very anticipated fight card for Philadelphia fight fans. We have three of our own on the card. We have Mike Jones, IBF number one welterweight contender. He is going for a first world title as he fights Randall Bailey. That fight is between the number one and number two contenders for the vacant IBF title. As Mike Jones is saying, he doesn't want to look ahead, of course. You know, we've got a fighter in there, Randall Bailey, that can, as we've seen, especially with our friend Al Gatto, can knock you out with one punch. And but Mike Jones, you know, he realizes that if he wins this fight, he wins impressively. Yeah, so that's a very exciting possibility for him. Also on the card, we have another Philadelphia fighter, Tion the Technician Kennedy. He is going for the bantamweight title.
Sorry about that, folks. We had some major technical difficulties there. I got the dreaded blue screen virus showing up. It came up, and my trick with that, never been a victim of it where it crashed my computer, but every time I see it, I always used to unplug my computer when I could. Now I get the plug duct tape to the back of this laptop I'm using, so I had to just do the regular shutdown method with the power button and reset the whole thing. That usually works until I get the multivirus scan done. So hopefully that won't resurface again. I didn't even get it till I put on SureDog, so I hope SureDog's not the one that did it. That's a little bit scary. Yeah, they call it the blue screen of death. It does it to the Xbox, too. The Xbox has the same type of thing. It hurts.
Shit.
Yep.
Well, I was talking, before we got disconnected. Play card on Saturday to pack up Bradley's play. It was exciting, for Philadelphians. We got our own. Fighting in high-profile fights. I mentioned Mike Jones, going for a first-world title against Randall Bailey. Mike Jones, undefeated fighter. Randall Bailey's a tremendously hard puncher. I had the privilege of seeing him live on the Bernard Hopkins undercard about 10 years ago. So Bailey's been in on the elite level for, the better part of a decade now. His biggest weakness is I've always seen him get hurt with body shots. Jones is a good puncher, but he's a smart doctor, too. So that'll be an interesting fight. The number one and number two IBF welterweight going for the vacant title. And then Keon, the technician, Kennedy, I had just pulling the info up, still having a hard time pronouncing the name of his opponent, a Cuban fighter by the name of Guillermo Rigadanus, or something like that, Rigadanus, something. He's from Cuba. He's a world champion. He's only 9-0 with 7 knockouts. I remember watching him fight on Showtime a few months ago, and he was just absolutely spectacular. So that's going to be a really hard fight for Keon Kennedy. And one thing about Keon, I don't know if he's been the same being in a fight a couple years ago where his opponent passed away after the fight. The grueling fight at the Blue Horizon, and, sadly, ended in a loss of life. And a lot of fighters never fully recover from that, and I'm not sure Keon has. And then making his pro debut is a hot fighter by the name of Jesse Hart. He's the son of a former middleweight contender, Eugene Cyclone Hart. Jesse Hart was a highly touted amateur, had great ambitions of making the U.S. Olympics team in 2012, and lost a close decision in the trot, almost to the point he was going to quit boxing, but they decided to give him another go-around. He's turned pro, and he's going to make his pro debut, so that'll be also interesting. So Philadelphia's in full effect out in Vegas this weekend.
Cool. Well, we definitely got up again. We also have some UFC on F3 coming up tomorrow night, and we're gonna connect with a surprise guest here in a second here, if I can get this to work. We got a guy that I'm gonna audition here for a another hosting slot here. We're gonna have a sort of a third wheel, I guess.
You're going to have a surprise guest. Well, this surprise, who's being surprised? Am I being surprised? Is the audience being surprised?
Everybody.
everybody. Oh, it's a surprise to me, too.
Yeah.
Please come in, okay?
Except for me. No, I'm not trying to replace you. Don't get that idea.
I've been at the show in 4.5 years.
That's right. But can you hear us now, Tom?
Rich, yeah, here we are. Okay.
Right.
Well, what an omen. I get on and all of a sudden everything collapses on us, huh?
No. I don't know. I don't think it was you that caused it. It was the blue screen of death.
Yeah, I hope not. Yeah, hey, I'm just tuning in. I didn't catch the early part, but, you know, we've got the Pacquiao fight on Saturday. But how about Kelly Pavlik tomorrow? What's your comments on that one?
I haven't read anything about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess
don't even know more. He's our boxing rain man.
Well, actually, I was just reading a little bit about it when I got back to my office just a few minutes ago. And I'm pulling up some of the information on it right now. As one highly respected boxing writer was saying, the fighter that he's going up against, and I'm pulling that information now, has probably the best chin he's ever seen. And, you know, Pavlik is a hell of a puncher. So right there, you get, you know, the irresistible force meeting the immovable object. Scott Stigman, I believe, is the fighter's name that he'll be fighting. 22-3, 12 knockouts, down from Bedford, Virginia. I'm just looking at his record as he speaks. Has a stoppage win over former contender alum Jonathan Reed. Looking at some of the other guys he's fought, Jesse Nicklaus, good fighter. Farah Ennis out of Philadelphia, good fighter that he's lost to. Always gone the distance, that's the thing here. And I'm John Michael Perry, I've seen him fight. You're not a great record, but a tough fighter. Sigmund has a stoppage win over him. So I'm looking at his record, two stoppage wins over John Michael Perry. So what we got here is we got a fighter that might not be in Pavlik rig pedigree-wise, but from what I've read, he's got an exceptional chin. And right now, if people tell you with all that's going on with him, he's only fought, you know, figure two rounds in the last 13 months. It's going to be interesting how much he's really got left and how dedicated he is to the sport.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's going to be a good, just a good test. I don't think it's a gimme fight for Pavlik by any stretch, and it's going to tell a lot about him. So.
All right, well, Tom, give us a little bit of perspective. I know you gave me your background, but just let everybody know where you've been, what you've been up to, and how you got involved in mixed martial arts and being interested in boxing and all that stuff.
Well, I go back, I guess I'm dating myself here, but I'm old enough to just about remember the left hook that Sugar Ray Robinson landed on Gene Fulmer, okay? The old Friday night cavalcade of sports. And always had an interest in the sport and took it up myself back in junior high school to deal with some bullies. I was skinny with a baby face and a big mouth, so that made me a bully magnet. And it gave me so much respect. I think boxing's one of those things that, like a lot of sports, it can look easy until you try it. You know, you see the best guys in there, and they can make it look so smooth. But I don't know if there's anything more difficult. I'm sorry?
Yeah, it's definitely tough. That's definitely tough. Tony and I actually met, we didn't meet, we were supposed to meet. If the brackets had been different in the 1998 National Championships for college, we would have squared off for a medal of some kind. Ended up getting the bronze medal that year. And Tony had to face the guy.
Boxing is one of these sports where you learn so much about yourself, and MMA also. I mean, I think that it's a team sport in the sense that nobody prepares for it on their own. But when you're in that ring or that cage, you learn so much. There's nowhere to go, you know, nowhere to go at all. And I was always a huge fan. In fact, the first live fight I seen goes back to the, I believe it was 1967. With George Chaval, heavyweight contender from those days, if that rings a bell with anyone.
Yeah.
George had, I think to this day, he had about the best chin I've ever seen. I'm not saying he was the most skilled fighter I've ever seen, but my God, what a what an entertaining introduction that was. And going through the 80s, tough man quite a bit. And then in the early 90s when MMA came out, it was kind of humbling for me because I realized just how much I didn't know, so I started training all over again, and here we are. So, and right now I'm working with Real MMA, which is a new fight league starting out in Las Vegas, and I'm friends with the owner of the company who's sponsoring the league. So we had our first event Friday, May 11th. And we've got some more coming up, and got some fairly big names working with Drink Real Water. Gray Maynard has been involved, Joe Lozon, and a few others. So we'll see where things go. And it was sort of interesting when I went out to work with this fellow about 6 years ago, Brent Jones, and he wasn't really into the fight game all that much, and I think I created a monster. Took him to a few live events, and now he's addicted.
Awesome. Well, of course, we also got to talk about the big UFC Ultimate Fighter finale that we had last Friday, and I wrote a piece for Bleacher Report asking, is the tough schedule too tough, or the tough live anyway? Because I kind of thought it was a little bit disturbing to have these guys fight 3 weeks in a row like that, and it's never been done before in that fashion. I mean, they fought on the show like that 3 weeks in a row before, but you know, it hasn't been done with the finale being so close to the end of the show like this. And I think they ought to rethink that and change that makeup. And we saw these two guys come into the finale Friday night, and they both looked spent before they threw a punch.
I noticed that. And, you know, I think maybe part of the reasoning was it was a new channel, a whole new format, and they wanted to try some different stuff, but I'm not sure. I don't like the night that it's on.
Me either. That's what I wrote in the article.
Yeah, and now I don't know. Does anyone know about the ratings, how the ratings have been this year compared to previous years? I haven't seen anything on that.
I was talking about that a few weeks ago. The ratings went way down. I was saying last week, actually, that the Friday night fights being on the same night, I said that a few times on the show. It's just a major competition thing that they should have thought of way beforehand, and you know, the show has always been on Wednesdays. Back on that day, that's what the fans are used to, and whether it was Fox is doing or what happened, I don't know, but you know, the ratings have been down this year. I did read that in a few different articles. The ratings for the finale were up, but I don't think you had a very popular Friday Night Fights show on the same night this week as we have had in past weeks with, you know, combat sports fans going back and forth a lot between boxing and MMA. You never want to have that conflict.
No, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, to me, it's an open-ended question if the show has run its course. I mean, I certainly hope not, but I don't know.
I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, it's just an excellent way to bring these guys in. It really makes careers for people, even who don't end up on the show, on the UFC roster in the end. You know, they can always say, I was an Ultimate Fighter contestant, and get tickets sold in different arenas and some of the smaller circuits. And it's great for the UFC because it really puts these guys through an intensive boot camp. And it's way better than any kind of basic training that you could get in the military if you're going to go into MMA. I mean, it's like,
oh yeah, and if you look at look at the talent that's come out of that show, going back to season one, you know, it just goes and goes and goes. So let's hope that a few adjustments can be made to get things back on track again. So.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, I think they just kind of. They got a little pissed when people were mentioning the ratings, because the way they look at it, the Zuffa people, is they're making money either way. You know, they made this deal with Fox, and they got paid up front, I think. I mean, maybe not everything up front, but they got, you know, a big price tag to do this Fox deal. So it's all water under the bridge for them, whether people watch or not, because they're going to watch these guys once they get into the UFC and they get on pay-per-view cards. So it's like, I think it pisses them off when people start talking about ratings, because it's not like they're making more money because more people are watching.
But you still have to wonder why they chose Friday night to go head-to-head with Friday night fights. Do you think that they were just so convinced that they would outdraw them?
I don't know. I would think it must have had something to do with programming. Programming schedule on FX, maybe. I mean, I don't know what's on Wednesday nights normally in that slot, but maybe that's one of the things I noticed. There's always a movie on after, you know, usually there's a movie on after the Friday night episode, so it's like one of those nights where they had an opening to throw something in before their movie, so they did it on Friday. I don't know. I mean, Fox is in the boxing business, too. They do some Fox Sports shows here and there with boxing. So you'd think they'd know that. You know, it's not a matter of ignorance of the marketplace. And they were actually competing with ESPN. That's the other thing. You know, maybe they did it on purpose. I haven't thought about that yet, but it's crossed my mind now that, you know, ESPN was trying to get that deal. UFC folks decided not to go with Spike TV. ESPN wanted to have that slot, so maybe it was like a F you to ESPN, because they've had some tensions with them over this couple different stories, like the fighter pay report that made some splashes. And maybe that might have something to do with it, too, on a little jab to their face.
Well, I guess time will tell. I mean, hopefully they'll reevaluate after this season and just take a look at everything, you know, as far as the whole format, the night that it's on, everything else. So we'll see. But I would agree, three fights in 3 weeks, oh.
Yeah, and then, you know, just today they had the NFL making headlines again with 2,000 players, former players. They just got consolidated into this big lawsuit because the fighters, I mean, players were not told about some of the serious risks that the NFL knew about and did a study on and then falsified the results of. And I've done a little bit of writing about that for some other websites, but it's kind of like the same deal with the UFC. And Dana White is always saying, we want to be better than the NFL. Well, you have to look at some of these issues if you're going to do that. And we've already had at least one guy sue over some shenanigans that injured him in the house. I don't think he won the case, but he sued them over it. And, that was just outside of competition stuff. But, you know, when you got these guys fighting three times in 3 weeks, and in one case we had a guy on a few years ago, actually last year I think, Chuck O'Neill, who was on season 13, I think it was. And he basically was talking about he fought four times in 17 days on that season. And basically just took him 6 months to even recover completely from that whole show. And he, of course, he got an opportunity to fight on the finale card and then lost that shot, so he's back in the regional circuit. But, you know, he's a tough guy. He looked like he was in great shape. But the thing is that people don't realize it's not just the fight. It's the weight cutting. It's the basic, you know, the training schedule that you have to go through. And just not having time to recover if you get injured. And
yeah, that would have to be the big one. Four times in 17 days is ridiculous, period. I mean, I don't care if you go out and win in the first minute. You know, there's going to be something that you've got to recoup. And mentally, if nothing else, let alone physically.
Yeah. And I used to be one of those guys that say, well, I'd love to see them go back to the three fights in one night format just once just to see what happens. But, you know, now that I've been following the sport a little bit longer, I would never say that because...
Well, I think we have some union issues there about, what is it, more work, less pay, or I don't know, I don't think we'll see the tournament format again.
No.
But
I'd like to see it in boxing in some senses, more like the prize fighter setup that they've been doing successfully in the UK to generate some more interest in boxing. But I think the one-night single elimination deal is not coming back to MMA.
Yeah. In fact, I remember a comment from the old days with Don, the old Dragon Wilson. And, like, he made a good comment that stuck with me. He said that any time in a fight, there's the X factor, that there are just certain things that you really don't know and that you can't prepare for. And when you have to fight three guys to win in one night, the X factor is so huge, it's like an opponent in and of itself. I mean, you have no idea how long your fight will be. You have no idea how long your opponent's fight will be. There are just so many variables with styles, fights, everything else. And I've always remembered that.
And this season's final was still pretty exciting, I mean, given the lack of a rest for these guys.
Yeah.
I think, actually, ironically enough, even with the tough schedule, there was only two guys who were on the show who didn't fight on this card. So they all bounced back pretty well. But, I mean, if you're going to be in a situation where you're literally getting an opportunity to fight for a future career in the UFC, I don't think you're going to even tell anybody if you're hurt. So that adds another dynamic to it. But Michael Chiesa won the final against Ally Aquinta in typical fashion for him. It seems like he always ends up getting into trouble on the feet and then somehow winds up on the ground and submits his guys or pounds him out. It's like a theme for him. There was one fight in his run for the championship there where he got punched in the gut so hard it knocked him to the ground. And I thought he was for sure going to get TKO'd there, and he came back and won the fight. So just an incredible season, an incredible run for him. Just as I mentioned in the article, looking back at FX people, he's on the first page of the fighter profiles, and he says, for his quote, "I feel like sometimes I'm unbeatable, and I'm not taking anything away from any of the other guys. I know there's a wealth of great fighters here. I just think I have the formula and the style and the heart to push through every single form of adversity this show is going to put in my way." And that's before
that
you do it.
That is a great
there.
Quote. And I'll tell you, it seems like every time I underestimated him, I was wrong.
Yeah.
So we'll see where he goes. So I would like to see him keep working his stand-up game, and I'm sure he will. But he just seems to find a way to do it.
And this is one of the first years I ever, especially with the fighting to get into the house format, where I've watched it, and I saw that first fight, and I said, this guy is going to be one. Somebody's going to be in the finals. I really thought his first fight was his best. Just the technical skill that he showed, and just a tremendous performance to get into the house and then to stay there and then to win. Just an incredible story, too, behind it, because talk about adversity. He was going into the show knowing his father was suffering from end-stage cancer, and gets into the show, and within 2 weeks of the show, he's having to go back home to attend his father's funeral. So that was really rough for him to deal with, and then to deal with all the physical stuff on top of that. You couldn't write a better story.
Well, I think that speaks volumes about his mindset, his strong mindset. I'm so impressed with him.
Yeah, it was a great show. And then, of course, the main event didn't disappoint either. We had Martin Kampman versus Jake Ellenberger. And I've never seen so many punches thrown so fast in a mixed martial arts fight, period.
You know, I had a friend that was working, and so he wanted me to give him the play-by-play of it, and I'm going through it, and finally I'm just telling, it's over! Martin did it again! My God, talk about it. And you figure this just a few months after that Alves fight.
Right.
now the question is, so the question will be now, where does Martin fit in the title picture? How do you see that?
I don't know. It's tough because he really struggled in that fight. I mean,
it seems like that's the pattern, that he gets rocked, he has a hard time, then he seems to come back to win. The question is, if he gets his chance with GSP, I don't know. Coming back from some of these opponents has been one thing. Coming back against GSP is a whole other story. But I guess that's why we fight, huh? But I mean,
well,
I think as far as excitement, Martin is just on a roll.
Right. That cut too reminded me of Rocky Marciano, because Tony and I have always been big fans of his, and we've actually ended up talking to a lot of people who grew up with him, and had a couple people on our show that knew him personally and were related to him. And it reminded me of the fight where Rocky pretty much split his nose in half. who was that against, Tony?
Second fight with Ezra Charles.
Right. Where the ref told him he was going to stop the fight if he didn't go out and knock him out. Or Rocky convinced the ref to let him go one more round. And that's pretty much what Kid did. He was busted up real bad, and came out there and finished it up, knowing that with all that blood, it couldn't be long if a ref would step in and stop it.
You know, as someone who characterized Marciano as someone. Is the kind of fighter who is not afraid to look awkward or look a little silly. He would still keep coming no matter what. And, you know, I think that fits him so much, don't you think?
Oh, definitely.
I mean, he would stick to his plan, and there was just no discouraging him. He's coming, and he ain't stopping.
Right. That's one of the things that I think that a lot of the sports writers would always key on about him is that he would just, one guy that I remember part of the quote was one of my favorite quotes about Rocky was guy that said he would just kind of plod around the ring and he would eventually club you down.
Yeah, that's a great description. That is a great description. You remember that television show he had on Classic Sports back in the late 90s? What was the name of that show? Do you remember?
I'm not sure.
Classic Sports Show back in the late 90s. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, and he was the host, and he would show some of his fights, but then he'd show some other ones, and he always had a guest on there. Sometimes he would have some of his old opponents, like he had Jersey Joe Walcott on there once. I'm trying to think of the name of the show now. Be nice to get some of those old classics.
I think there are some clips on YouTube. I think I know what you're talking about.
Of course, my video collection is so extensive, I won't live long enough to go through it, you know, but always want to keep adding more, you know.
Yeah, a whole website full of all the YouTube clips collected. It used to be a lot better. We had a whole blog going, but I had to curtail the hosting on it. For some reason, there was something going on there. But anyway, it's Rocky49wins.com. Been running that site for a while, and we'll put Rocky stuff on there. But getting back to UFC, we got a big event coming up tomorrow night, UFC on FX3. We got to run through that, of course. The main event there is going to be a rematch between Ian McCall and Demetrius Johnson. They had a draw fight there. And this is going to be the rubber match, I guess.
Yeah, that's a tough one because that was such a back and forth. I don't know. I'm kind of I'll just be tuning in, but as far as predictions, I ain't making one on that one.
No, me either. I mean, I actually don't even like Demetrius Johnson. Okay, we're back, I think. Everybody here?
I'm here.
All right, looks like we lost Tom. That was Tom Padgett, by the way. He's a guy who just started doing a little bit of a writing for us. And probably had to skip out there, but we have our next guest coming in shortly at 9:15. So I don't know where I got cut off there, but I think I was a couple fights into the UFC on FX card coming up on Friday. So I don't know, what's the last word you heard, Tony? What? But basically, I'm just going to read through the card real quick here. In addition to Ian McCall and Demetrius Johnson in the main event, we've got Eddie Wineland versus Scott Jorgensen. Wineland's 18-8-1, Jorgensen 13-5. We've got Eric Silva versus Charlie Brenneman. Silva's 13-2, Brenneman is 15-3. Jared Papazian fighting Dustin Pig. Papazian's 14-7. Pig is 10-5. Then we got Josh Neer coming back here. I haven't seen him in a while. He's 33-10-1, fighting Mike Pyle, who's 22-8-1.
Private Pyle,
yeah. I don't know if his nickname is Gomer, but I doubted it. Sean Pearson, 11-6, fighting Jake Hecht, who's 11-3. Leonard Garcia, back on the in action. Had a couple contentious fights there with Nam Phan. He's 15-8-1, fighting Matt Grice, who's 14-4. I got Mike Pierce, 13-5, fighting Carlos Eduardo Roca, 9-1. And we have Seth Baczynski, 15-7, fighting Lance Benoist, who's 6-0. And a couple brother fights here. We got Kyle Magalhaes, who's 5-0, fighting Buddy Roberts, who's 11-2, and Bernardo Magalhaes, who's 11-2, fighting Henry Martinez, who's 8-2. And I know that there's a Vinny Magalhaes. I don't know if it's pronounced the same way or spelled the same way, but I wonder if all three of those guys are brothers. I think that would be first for the UFC if they are. We also have Tim Means, 17-3, with one draw, fighting Justin Salas, who's 10-3. And a couple other little stories I wanted to mention. Speaking of retirements, one boxer is actually coming out of retirement. I don't know if you've heard this, Tony, but I know I mentioned it on the show before that Pavel Volak was considering going over to MMA. After he retired. And now it's official. Yeah, he did, after his rematch with Delvin Rodriguez last December, he announced his retirement a few days later. And now he's talking about coming back into combat sports as an MMA fighter. He says, "My background was as a successful New Jersey State wrestler and kickboxer, so I am going back to my roots. I will get to the UFC when I'm ready to make a statement in the lightweight division. I'm not going to jump in right away, but only when I know I can become champion. I have been training since December. Nobody will want to stand up with me, so I am working really hard on the ground game." Monty Cox, a famous manager in the Midwest there for MMA fighters, is going to take over his career. And he says he's confident that Volak can succeed. He says Pavel is unique in that he is in the prime of his career. He can stay in boxing and make a great living, but he has always had a love for MMA, and he wants to see how well he can do while he is at his best. It's nothing like some of the other boxers switching over when their best days are behind them. And Volak is 30 years old. He has a career record of 29-2-1 with 19 knockouts in boxing. And he's known for his tough chin and determination that provided boxing fans a lot of great fights and good moments. But we don't know exactly when he's going to make his debut, but it sounds like it's probably going to be sometime this year. And, you know, he's not getting any younger at 30 years old, but definitely not too old to start in MMA. And as we talked about in the past, you know, this mixed martial arts crowd, even with, you know, a few years under their belts being regulated, just doesn't seem like there's many boxers in there that really have mastered the art of boxing. One exception, of course, is George St. Pierre, who's actually trained by Freddie Roach, who's training Pacquiao, of course. But, you know, there's not too many guys out there who really take boxing seriously enough to, you know, put an emphasis on it. And even though that the sport of MMA seems to me to be mixing into territory of being more of a striker's game than anything these days, because the fans love to see it and the fighters get paid for it with these bonuses for knockouts and fight of the night. You see a lot more fights end up on the feet or stay on the feet through the whole, almost the whole time, or, you know, through most of the fight. So you'd think these guys would do more boxing training, more intense boxing training, and look better at it, but it is what it is, you know. Different people have different styles. I think a guy like Volak is going to fill a niche for a lot of people that isn't really that prevalent in MMA right now. He's going to maybe wake up a few people who don't take boxing seriously enough when they see what kind of advantage you can have with that kind of game. But the lightweight's a very popular division. So 155 is the weight there, and that's a very, very popular division. Right now in the UFC, if he ever makes it there, you know, there's a ton of really talented guys at that weight. So Wolak's going to have a lot to prove to get to the UFC level and then to win some kind of a championship there if he gets there. But I want to see more of it. I mean, I'd love to see more boxers try to make that transition. It used to be a lot more prevalent than it is today. But now you get all these guys talking about going to boxing because the paydays are better rather than going boxing to MMA. But we'll see. See what happens with Pavel. And we're expecting our guest tonight around 9:15 or so, coming up any minute now. Her name's Shannon Nurk, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, as I said before, but we'll ask her when she gets on. And she's a ring girl for Pro Elite, the old Pro Elite, everybody kind of thought it was gone, went off the map for a little while. Now it's back, based in Hawaii. I know that they were selling it for like cents on the dollar shares at one point. I don't know what happened there, but now it's back as a going concern, and I don't think they're selling shares as far as I know anymore, but definitely not at that price. But that's one of those leagues that are competing with the UFC, but there's not a whole lot of leagues out there in Hawaii, so it's pretty interesting. They actually had Chuck Liddell, I think, appeared on Hawaii 5-0 and fought in their cage on the show. So even though he's retired from official MMA combat, they had him in there as an actor. Cool. And they first resurrected that organization. All right, well, while we're waiting for Shannon.
Is he going to call in, or are we calling her?
Well, she's supposed to call in. I think she tried to call my actual phone number instead of the show number.
Yeah. I'm just going to roll away. I've got to make one of my odd observations in life. As, you know, we're doing so, I like to multitask, and there's nothing good on TV for me to watch.
You're not watching the Celtics?
No, I'm not a basketball fan. I think I watched almost 5 minutes of like one of the games with the Sixers. I'm on Twitter about it, because you all know I hate my job, and I want to get the hell out of it. So I'm on there, and I see the advocate of hospice, which is basically where people go to die. And it's a sales representative. Seriously? What are you like? The sales representative is looking enthusiastic. Hey, are you interested in dying? Come to our place and die with dignity. You'll love dying with us.
All right, well, I think we got Shannon now. Shannon, you there?
I'm going to be sarcastic.
Shannon, can you hear me now? Oh, she dropped off. That was weird.
She was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Oh, my fault.
I don't know what happened there. She was on, and then she was off. Well, we'll see what we can do there.
I'm sure that'll get me out of here. It'll work out the best of it. You guys get rid of me, and I get to kick the shit out of all of you. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. It could be all around.
Right. Well, we're going to have to wait another minute or so to get Shannon back on. But I just wanted to run through a couple quick things. The UFC let go, I think, of 10 fighters this week. A big sweep there. Might have a little bit to do with making some room for the Dream League fighters who no longer have a home. The Dream show was basically the predecessor of the baby of Pride, I guess. When Pride died, left behind a little bit of organization crew to take over with this Dream Stage Entertainment company there. It just became Dream. And basically, they were famous for a New Year's Eve show, and things fell through on the negotiations for the arena, and so Dream is done. And a lot of those Japanese fighters now are looking for new homes. So UFC dropped a bunch of guys this week. Dong Yang, Kamal Shalrus, who we actually had on the show, Jorge Lopez, Jeff Curran, Aaron Rosa, Efren Escudero, and Steve Cantwell. And even though they haven't been announced as cuts, there were a couple other people who had their profiles on UFC.com removed, and that's usually an indication they're going to get cut. So those guys were Alex Soto and Eric Wisely and Mike Massenzio. So I guess it goes to show you. You gotta keep your spot. You gotta keep winning. Anyway, here's Shannon back on. Shannon, can you hear us now?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
All right.
Oh my God, how to get a hold of? I'm like dialing every wrong number. I'm dialing like Kentucky numbers. Like I'm all over the place. But I finally got a hold of you, so we're good now.
Awesome. Well, I think I might have been butchering your name there. How do you pronounce your last name?
Erke. I-H-R-K-E.
I was just dropping the E at the end. I was calling you Erk.
No big deal. I've got called worse than that.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know we were kind of discussing that you've been involved with the Pro Elite organization, but how did you even get interested in fighting in the first place?
Actually, I grew up around the sport itself. My grandpa was, or still is, a huge UFC fan. So, even when I was little, I was sitting on the couch with him watching UFC fights. And then when I joined the Marine Corps, I got a lot more into it, just, with Marine Corps martial arts and stuff like that. Of course, the Marine Corps is a big sponsor of the UFC. So, me and, the other Marines would get together and watch the UFC fights. And then, of course, my last year of the Marine Corps, I was stationed near Moline, Illinois, which is where, Pat Miletich has his gym. Over in, I think he's in Moline or Rock Island. So I got a call saying, you should do the Spring Girl Contest Pro Elites in town. And I thought, there's no way. There's no way I'm going to win. I don't really have a fan base for that kind of thing. Sure enough, I ended up winning, and then I had this interview with Pro Elite, and ever since I won the Ring Girl contest, they've been asking me to come back to keep doing shows.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool. Lucky for me.
So it was just somebody said do it, and you were just like, all right, I'll give it a shot, and it paid off.
Yeah, I had no idea it would progress into what it has now. Like, even after I've, you know, done stuff with Pro Elite, I've done stuff with King of the Cage, and, you know, I have a couple fights coming down in Minneapolis with Sterling Entertainment June 22nd and 23rd over by the Hyatt downtown. So, yeah, just, again, constantly been getting booked for other stuff, and, you know, it's made me an even bigger fan of the sport itself.
All right, now, I know we always talk about the pay for fighters not being up to par in MMA to boxing, but what's the pay like for ring girls? Is it pretty good?
I would say it's not up to par. Everybody wants more money, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think the fighters should definitely be getting a lot more than, you know, some of what I've seen or what I've heard. But, you know, it's not bad. And, you know, when it comes down to it, a lot of people assume that ring girls just literally walk around the cage and that's it. Where I would like to do a lot more with that, you know, as far as, like, just being a spokesmodel, you know, for the brand, and even with Pro Elite, you know, when I go to do their fights, like, in Hawaii, they send me up a week early before the fight, and, you know, I went to the Wounded Warriors in on the Army base and the Marine Corps base, so, you know, I get to show my support in that way as well, and that's what I really like to do, you know, just walking around the cage is the easiest part of the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's definitely something that brightens the soldier's spirit when he sees a nice hot lady in a skimpy outfit.
And someone that knows military lingo, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things that it's near and dear to us, too, because, number one, I'm a graduate of Norwich University, the Corps of Cadets there, oldest mm-hmm. private military school in the country.
Right.
And I know a lot of guys that are serving now and have served, and did a big, actually, a memorial for a buddy of mine who was on my boxing team up in Norwich who died in Iraq. So
wow.
Definitely the military is something we definitely support. And one of our sponsors is Millifidel. I don't know if you've heard of those guys, but they have a clothing line that supports the West L.A. Fisher House.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and actually, I'll be in Vegas in July for the UFC Expo, and I'm going to be there with Ranger Up, who's, you know, all those guys are former Army. So, you
right.
know, anyway, that I could be involved from a military standpoint, you know, I'll be the first one to jump up and down with my hand in the air.
Cool. So how'd you end up in the military? What made you
I was going to college. I was going to St. Cloud State University in Pohnumtown, Minnesota. And I was in my second year, and, you know, I was thinking to myself financially, you know, I don't want to be that student that's $100,000 in debt and is a waitress at, you know, the local pub. And so I was like, oh, man, what am I going to do so I'm not, you know, in debt up to my eyeballs? So I came to my financial advisor, and she said, well, you're going to get your college paid for if you have a kid and you're a single mom, or if you join the military. And I said, well, I'm 19 years old. I'm just not going to have a kid. It's just not how it's going to be for me. So I joined the military, and I picked the Marine Corps. I heard it was the baddest of the bad, and, you know, I was told you can't do it. And so I was like, watch me. I'm going to, and I'm going to be better than all of you at it. So that's what I did.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved it. And, you know, I did paralegal work and stuff. I was stationed in South Carolina for 2 years, and I was stationed in a reserve unit in Rock Island, Illinois for 2 years. And, yeah, I fell in love with it. I mean, I would have joined had they not started having all the pay cuts, or had I would have stayed in.
It kind of made me think that I wasn't making a bad decision when I decided not to go in the military, especially with them talking about taking away the 20-year pension.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to happen within our generation here, so.
Yeah, definitely.
It's unfortunately, one of those things that, you know, they think they can cut and get away with it now, but money
yeah.
has to be saved. But,
yeah, and even when the officers, he said, you know, if you're going to get out, now is the time. So.
Right. Yes. Used to be a lot better, but what can you do?
Right.
Now that you're involved in mixed martial arts, what do you love most about being involved and getting to be ringside at a lot of these fights?
I like my front row seat, to be honest. You know, a thing that's really cool is when you're on the outside looking in, watching the fights and stuff, but you get to see the weigh-ins and get to see the fighters on a personal basis, it becomes a lot it becomes a lot more serious for you, and just the fighters have a brotherhood almost, together. You know, they fight each other and they shake hands afterwards. And, the Marine Corps is all like that too. It's just kind of like a frat, and I really like that aspect of it. It's such a tight-knit group of people.
Mm-hmm.
They have like that camaraderie that the military has in a way.
Right. Yeah, there was one time when you were talking about the weigh-in that I ever saw a real problem at the weigh-in, and I'm going back about 15 years ago. I did a lot of even when I was fighting in amateurs, weigh-ins, you knew most of the guys from the different colleges and all that. So, and, the Lock Haven team, which I fought for, we would show up, we would do our private weigh-ins, whatever. No real issues. My only time was one time I was so damn dehydrated from sucking out 15 pounds in about 2.5 days that was a rough weigh-in for me. But I was at a pro card back in 98 in Philadelphia. And I had gone down because I was the chief sparring partner for one of the guys on the card. And he was 0-1 as a pro, but he was a good fighter. He's got a real bad break in his pro debut. So we go there. Now, he was tall. He was tall and lanky, about 6'2", he looked like a smaller version of Holyfield. And he shows up to this weigh-in in January, and he's got, like, an overall, like, a big, like, Carhartt, like, overalls on, and a knit hat pulled down. He looks like the meanest guy in the world. And he's set to fight the brother of the promoter, this guy was Greek, so they're making a big deal with the Greek belly dancers, and this guy was going to be, as a pro debut, getting the whole shebang. He sees my friend step on the scale looking nasty as hell, and he goes, "I ain't fighting him." So now they're like, "Well, shit, now they're trying to mix and match the fighters at the weigh-in." We're like, "Well, maybe he'll fight this guy, and our guy will fight this guy, and this guy will fight this guy." So now our guy, who was 0-1, is going to fight a guy 0-0. They wanted to put him in with a guy that had a lot of experience. Well, wasn't a good fighter, per se, but he had experience, and he was also a professional kickboxer. So he had 5 or 6 kickboxing fights. So he had about 13 to 14 professional fights under his belt. And the manager, who also helped train me, said, "No, we're not doing this. You're screwing us. You're kicking us out of the one fight that we had agreed to because your guy doesn't want to fight our guy. No, we're leaving. We're out of here." So we get on the elevator. Now, not a big elevator. And on the elevator was my friend Andre, myself, my father, who was also a trainer down at the gym, the other head trainer, Red Thompson, and some random fighter. We don't know who he is. So as we're on this elevator, kind of packed, Red Thompson turns to this other guy. "Hey, you fighting tonight?" The guy turns around and goes, "No. I was supposed to fight you," and puts his finger in my friend Andre's face and says, "So apparently you're too much of a pussy to fight me tonight." We're like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 what's going on?" He's like, "Yeah, you were going to fight me, but you're afraid and this and that." And then Rev's like, "Yo, man, listen, we ain't got no quarrel with you. And the thing is, they were trying to screw us out of the fight that we were guaranteed. And if they do it to us once, they'll do it to us all the time. Now, I'm in a crowded elevator with 2 super middleweights going nose to nose, and I'm in the middle of it trying to break it up. And I'm like, oh, shit, they're going to swing, and I'm going to get clocked. And I ain't got nowhere to duck." The fight did get canceled. And then we were going to, Andre was going to fight that guy, and he would have whipped his ass. It unfortunately did not happen. But for the most part, the weigh-ins are, hey, great. A little bit of trash talk. I remember showing up at an amateur weigh-in, and I was fighting the kids from Penn State, and all the Penn State team had gotten there first, and they were all laying down in the one room, you know, just laying down, resting and all that. I walked in and said, oh, I see you guys are practicing for later, all going to be laying flat, especially the guy fighting me. He was a friend of mine, so he laughed and he gave me the opportunity in the ring, and we joked, no problem. There is a camaraderie, but sometimes, once in a while, it just
right.
gets ugly. I saw in that elevator.
So, Shan, what are some of the big things that have happened to you? From the ring girl circuit.
You, as like in terms of like big things, what do you mean?
Some of the interesting things that have happened to you since you became a ring girl.
You know what? I've had, like, crazy fans. Like, I've had some crazy fans, but, you know, I think the thing that I like most about ring girling is watching the girl fights. Honestly, like, I've had a whole new appreciation for some of these female fighters that have came around. Sarah McMahon, Rose Nana Yunus, she's fighting with King of the Cage right now, and it's great to see from a female standpoint. Some of these girls are kicking ass and taking names. Like, actually, the first fight I did with King of the Cage in Walker, Minnesota, there was a girl fight, and these guys literally had a standing ovation. Like, no other fight had it, and of course, like, the next King of the Cage fight that was in Walker, everyone was asking, is there a girl fight? Is there a girl fight? So I thought that was pretty cool, too. So it'll be interesting to see if people like Invicta and those female fight cards will bring in as much as those males do, as much as the viewers do. Hello?